conversations with recipients of the Governor's Awards in the Arts. From SDPB, today is Monday, February 10th. This is In the Moment. The awards ceremony is this week in Fort Pierre. We will hear from artists and arts supporters throughout the week. Today, artist and art educator Mary Whipp. She has traveled the state with her prints and paints. We'll talk with her about the forest, the landscape, and what it means to be an artist in residence. Plus, photographer and arts advocate Paul Schiller will talk about big visions that cross the river and the leaps of faith that take South Dakota into the future. That's coming later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's SDN Communications Studio in Pierre. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Mary Whipp has spent almost 1,000 weeks as an artist in residence across South Dakota. She has brought her creativity and imagination to classrooms, hospitals, libraries, and nursing homes. She's worked in one-room schoolhouses and in the largest school districts in the state, and she has helped budding artists from ages 4 to 94. So it is for her years of service in arts education that she's being honored with a Governor's Award in the Arts. The ceremony is coming up in Fort Pierre on Wednesday. Ahead of the event, Mary Whipp stopped into SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City.
The really steep learning curve, and it was actually that first year in the Rapid City schools, I remember passing scissors out in a kindergarten class and realizing that many of them had never seen a pair of scissors before.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay.
The way they were holding them and looking at them and pondering this object. It was like, oh, I'm going to have to fit in a little tutorial on this tool. And there were some people then, too, that I with the school system that were there to help me, too. And I remember getting a little advice.
And what did you find the benefit of for the, we'll talk about the benefit to you as an artist in a minute, but bringing artists into schools, into a community center, into a nursing home, into a hospital setting, into these different places, having a working artist come in and say, I'm going to show you some things. You can watch me do my work. We're here to interact. What is the power of that been for you for the people who, you know, are in the classroom?
It's a pretty powerful experience for those students to play with the magic of creating something.
Yeah.
And then as they meet me, I'm coming in as a complete stranger. I'm going to come and leave, and they all know that, and I'm not passing any prejudgment on their abilities. I have expectations. I pretty quickly learned some classroom management skills and just needing to make the most of that time.
Right.
So it's a pretty engaging scenario for those students. You might know that, you know, I did a lot with paper marbling and so I'm bringing in all kinds of cultural notions. I'm bringing in kind of just a really seductive medium
that's
real captivating. We're learning new vocabulary. I'm pulling in science, language, all kinds of things that really catch a hold of their attention. So we're learning a lot about the visual elements. You know, an art training is learning about our sensory, our visual sensory apparatus and what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about color line, pattern, shape, repetition, directional forces, all of that stuff.
And expression of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that, I feel like, is something that a visiting artist can do uniquely. Because, like you said, they don't know you. You're not the teacher. You're not, you know, really giving a grade. You come in and they get a fresh look at you. They might be inspired by something that you bring that they've not seen before. And one of your jobs, I always found, was to tell them that their what they thought, what they liked, mm-hmm. what they wanted to make mattered.
Yeah. It's a way where we, a situation where we learn more about ourselves.
Yeah.
And we learn more about others. I think it really brings in an element of respect, receptivity. We learn pretty quickly, I think, in that situation that there's more than one right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just really fosters an outlook of acceptance, broadens our perceptions.
How did you become a better artist because of the 1,000 weeks of residencies and counting that you've done? In what ways were, you know, your students, whether they be K through 12 or adults, have reflected something back to you that you've been like, well, that just changed my art practice?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm part of that learning and watching and, you know, thinking for myself and seeing what others think. That's all present during those days. And I guess also that I'm constantly then each day using that vocabulary and those materials in the teaching part. Mm-hmm. And then typically I also set aside some time to work on some of my own projects.
Yeah. That is one of the best parts of a residency, is that you're making something while you're in this space, and that space is changing in many ways what you're making, right?
That's true. Yeah. Sometimes I've gone out, and I guess one of the things about this work is I've been able to travel the entire state again and again.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the majority of school systems, so the landscape changes, and you know, I can go out and sketch from where I am. There's the visual aspect of the landscape, and then also the social element where, you know, people, there's a really diverse social thing in the state too. Every town, every school has its own little flavor.
Yeah.
You know, going back to that first real big year where I had two semesters in Haakon County, the good weather quarters in the fall and spring, I went out to the rural schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'd have one school in the morning and one in the afternoon, and got to travel through that vast open landscape. Some of the roads I took were through open pastures where you couldn't even, they were so big you didn't even see fences all the time. There were places where you couldn't see anything but the, you know, really beautiful rolling hills and draws, and be at one school in the morning and then drive for an hour, start partway, and eat lunch at some old barn or something, and then drive to the next school. And
it's not a bad way to be an artist. You know, just not bad. It's not a bad career to have. Traveling from place to place like that and having lunch in a barn and then going on to the next.
Yeah. And then I've stayed in a variety of, we used to stay in people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
I've slept in a teepee, slept in my van.
Yeah.
I slept in a teacher's lounge 1 week. and then, you know, sometimes in somebody's basement. I remember waking up one morning in a basement, maybe it was during the night. Anyway, I had to think for a while about where I was.
Wow. And then the legacy of that, you won't always know what happened. I know that there was a period of time where I was doing a lot of volunteering in my daughter's own school, you know, doing writing workshops as a parent, not necessarily as an artist in residence, but, you know, she went to an A+ art school, so there was lots of opportunities for parents to come in and you know, teach or participate with their artistic specialties. And for a while there were quite a few young adults who had pursued some kind of writing career, education, or, you know, had integrated it into their life in a way that I would see them and their parents would say, oh, do you remember when you came to school? My daughter still journals, or she's an English major now. And I was kind of blown away by that. you, and I was a very small, I have a very small footprint in the schools. You have inspired so many South Dakotans then to create art for a lifetime or to support the arts in their communities. Yeah. Do you have an awareness of that?
You know, it's interesting because I do occasionally meet someone who remembers my visit to their school. And in fact, was it in August this year, a young veterinarian that had joined the office where we take our animals remembered that we had marbled paper up in Camp Crook up in Harding County, up there along the Montana border. And she said the same thing that others have said. They'll say, oh, I still have my papers. or my mother still has a box with my all the art stuff that we did. You know,
so. Oh, I love that. How did you get into the marbling techniques? And paper making? Was that always part of your art practice? Or did you add certain things to your art practice because...
Oh, those those two I added.
You added,
Because my forte in my personal art is, you know, the drawing and printmaking.
Yeah.
Which I can't tell you how much I love those. But I've always, even in those media, I've been attracted to pattern, visual patterns, you know, colors and shapes, repeating. And then also, over time, realized that the marbling, which is a very ancient practice where you float colors on a liquid, move them with air or tools into a pattern and then transfer them onto paper or cloth, that there's a pattern of motion, as there is with printmaking, where you know, once you've got your block or plate, you're rolling the ink again and again and printing it. So there becomes this mantra of motion. And so not only do the patterned papers attract my attention, I mean, I just think they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
But the process of making them is real repetitive. So after I'd been in the program with the State Arts Council for a couple of years, I had been kind of playing around at home with these media and then started bringing them into the schools. And the marbled paper was still is a long-lasting hit. It's mesmerizing, and there's so much that I can draw into it in the classroom.
Yeah.
In fact, for years now, I've paired up with the science teacher rather than the art teacher because there's surface tension, acid-base reactions, all kinds of science-y things that I can.
And when I think of your work, and I think of you and I, some people know, have spent some time in the forest together, and you have an eye for finding the smallest, most fragile, most delicate neighbor of moss or flora or lichen in those tiny patterns and shapes and lines. Yeah. Tell me about that part of your art that is drawn again and again to the things that you see in your own backyard, as it were.
Yeah, that's right. So I live on an old homestead in the Black Hills National Forest, and you know, I guess I've always been into details and looking closely. So I'm often on the ground perusing, you know, these little tiny ecosystems of non-vascular plants. That's the lichens, the mosses, the liverworts. They all tend to live in the same places, and I guess I just see a real rich tapestry, not just visually, but functionally, ecologically, you know, that these things have purpose and meaning in the forest ecosystem. But so my own artwork is often botanical in nature, and I'm looking at little plants and their details, often blowing them up into a larger format that's more easily seen.
Yeah.
But I do incorporate the marbled papers in my drawings and develop what I would call a deep pool of pattern. So it's the patterns of the marbled paper underneath the drawing and then the patterns of the leaves and things over that, sometimes patterns of cast shadows onto the leaves also.
What surprises you when you're in the, when you have spent so much time and have a familiarity with many of these things, do they still surprise you in their uniqueness?
Yeah, they're my passion. You know, you probably heard me. I think you said just a minute ago, they're my neighbors. So, you know, a certain liverwort or lichen, I kind of know where it, what it likes. And so, you know, if I look in that habitat, I mean, it's expected, but it's also a surprise. It's like, oh, look, there's so and so. You know,
yeah,
because that's where they belong.
I learned that from you.
Did you?
Yes, and I will never forget that. That surprised me when I first heard you say that. I was like, what do you mean, neighbors? And, you know, have brought that home to think about in my own life. What does that mean for me?
So have you found some neighbors?
Yes, I have found some neighbors. And I'm getting to know them, and I'm constantly, you know, I have such a small footprint in my neighborhood, and still I don't know who's there. And that has opened up a whole world in my own literal backyard in the city. You know?
That makes my day. Well, you know, I mean,
this is art.
It goes hand in hand with the art, yeah. Because, you know, what the arts education does, it's not just to make an artist.
Yeah.
It's for each person's, it's to heighten and sharpen their tools of perception. And if you think about it, it's our senses that inform our world. And if we don't even have a vocabulary for it or any experience with the details of it, we just miss out on a lot. So it enriches our lives. And I think, especially with an early art education experience, you know, like in grade school, you're making neuron connections that you're not going to make any other way.
And
it makes us critical thinkers and problem solvers, even if you're not going to be an artist. It's it's a necessity, really.
I think that informs anything, and this is one of the things I think I probably learned from watching you a little bit, too, was, you know, I'm not a visual artist, but I spent this summer, I don't know, a couple hours drawing, sketching a mushroom.
Oh, good.
And ended up with a poem about the mushroom, you know, because that's what I was going to do, is I was going to write about it, because that was my intention, to write an essay that eventually became a poem. It might go back to being an essay, but it started out as a sketch that nobody will ever see, and that I'm sure isn't very quote unquote advanced or skilled or what have you, but it was the process of spending time with it that helped me figure out how to do the thing that I wanted to do. And that would be true for a chef who was going to cook it. That would be true for a scientist who was going to study it, for a landscaper who was going to remove it, for all of us in some ways.
Well, that exercise of doing the sketch may have very well made a large contribution to getting your mind in the place where you could write that poem.
Yeah.
Or think whatever thought, you know, depending on the application. But
how did you learn how to give yourself the kind of time that that requires? And most of us cannot, I mean, we have to take showers and buy groceries and probably earn incomes and such and such. But there are times when you will spend that extraordinary amount of time making that art. Did you have to learn how to give yourself permission to create that space?
Well, I think it's an ongoing struggle, you know. I mean, we all have to figure out how to prioritize and set aside time and just make it happen. I know, I'm thinking, you know, like getting yourself on an exercise program, how do you start? You know, it's kind of the same way. like, oh yeah, I want to draw, I want to write or whatever. So, you know, you just have to do it. You know, and I did want to say something about your last remark about the mushroom. And I think it was C.S. Lewis. I should look it up someday. I think I have looked it up. I think it was C.S. Lewis that said, if you really want to know what something looks like, draw it. And I might have shared with you that I've organized and conducted some biology classes where we're studying mosses and, you know, the details of moss. And those are very tiny leaves. And you know, one of the exercises in the three-day intensive workshop that I produce is to draw those leaves. You know, so we're having to put them under a microscope to really see them. But once you draw it, you know what the shape of the leaf is, you know, if it has a midrib or serrated edges or whatever.
It's not a bad thing to do with your life. Not a bad thing at all. I am so happy that you have received this award for the Governor's Award for the Arts Outstanding Service in Arts Education. I asked one of the other recipients in a different category, since it is the Governor's Award and we have a new governor, what would you want to know about a new governor's, you know, if you could ask a question or if you could provide insight to an incoming governor about arts in South Dakota, is there an area that you would want to focus on?
Well, yeah, I guess. Kind of what I stated before, you know, it's not, to me, having arts, especially in our elementary schools, which is where it's mostly not, you know, and some districts have art teachers, or they make good use of the Artisan Schools program, but it's not time wasted, and it integrates and gives meaning to other subjects. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, there's science, vocabulary, culture, spelling, you know. Yeah, you know, we even talk about certain plants and what is the scientific name of the seaweed that we use for marbling, and that can all be practiced and brought in and give meaning by the arts, not to mention the personal enrichment, you know, and insights to ourselves, to our neighbors, and the creative problem aspect, critical thinking aspect. I mean, these are all really essential to an arts education, and if we can provide that in our schools, we're doing our whole state a great favor.
That's Mary Whipp, one of the longest-serving visiting artists in residence in the state of South Dakota. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Before the break, you heard Mary Whipp. She is receiving the Outstanding Service in Arts Education Award during the Governor's Awards in the Arts this week. Now we'll hear from another award recipient. Paul Schiller is recognized for his outstanding support of the arts by an individual. He has left his mark across the state in projects he has coordinated, supported, and participated in. I asked him about it when he sat down with me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Here across from the Levitt and the Falls Park and the Steel District, and a lot of growth and development happening here, and a lot of arts. We're surrounded by arts. Yeah. So congratulations on outstanding support of the arts by an individual. This is a pretty significant acknowledgement.
Yeah.
What did it mean to you to have your name attached to this award?
What was interesting, Lori, is I got how I heard about it.
Yeah.
Jim Mathis called me, who I've known Jim a long time. He used to work at LNS with us and now has his own agency. But the call I took, I was at the Arc of Dreams, photographing a new angle on it. And he said, oh, by the way. And I said, me? He said, yeah, you. Oh, I said, thank you. And so when you get an award like this, you step back and wonder why, or start looking at what some of the things you did do that might have gained recognition.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I've gone with this whole thing.
All right. I want to go back to your love of the arts and your connection with the arts in the beginning. High school? College?
High school. My dad was an English teacher in Yankton High School and was a remarkable writer, but he was also a musician, played in a little Dixieland band to make a few extra bucks, and he had a love of photography, and I gained a knowledge and appreciation for his slides of the family and our vacations. So
really?
It kind of began there, and then as I went to the University of South Dakota for a degree, I got engaged with the publication down there, the Volant, the university paper, and really got into photography and starting to work with other people. My business partner was a writer, Craig Lawrence, and we really gained a wonderful working relationship there and a collaboration of work over about 3 years.
Yeah, first camera.
Huh, first camera was a little Brownie Instamatic. I still have it.
Do you? Okay.
And my dad had an Argus C3 35 millimeter. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
Took colored slides.
Wow.
And so, and he was really pretty good at it.
Were there photojournalists that you were inspiring you back then? Or were you, because you start in this photojournalism kind of
right.
area, not necessarily fine art.
Right. It was photojournalism.
Okay. Yeah.
In fact, I have a degree in photojournalism.
That's what
as
I thought.
A result
yeah.
of that. So it wasn't fine art, although I had an instructor there that came in from the East Coast by the name of Chip Simone, and he was an artistic photographer.
Yeah.
He and I kind of clashed, but I learned some things from him as a result of on the art side, and I started getting interested in just not taking pictures of people
mm-hmm.
in events, but then to start seeing what was around us and,
yeah.
and gain that interest and so forth.
Was there a tension between, because I studied photojournalism, not like you, I have a journalism degree, but I was very interested in photojournalism, rolled film, developed my own film at Augustana, and I always felt that there was a tension between the photojournalist and the creative photographer. You're always matching the ethics of photojournalism,
right.
but also wanting to make a great image and wanting to make a great picture.
Yep.
And feeling who you were behind the camera. Am I an artist? And when do I get to call myself an artist? How did you go from I'm a photojournalist to I'm an artist?
Well, it's interesting because I found in academics they weren't recognizing photography as art.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've been juried out of shows here and in Florida because they wouldn't accept photography as art. And I said, well, you know, I think painters use brushes to create their works. I use a camera to create mine. So why isn't it art?
Mm-hmm.
Because I now have artists coming to me and say, do you have anything in a certain area or I'm looking for this, and I welcome them to come in and look at my portfolio to see if maybe there's something that will spur their interest that they want to create from. And in fact, I'm working with Josh Spies right now on a project.
So they might use you as a reference
mm-hmm.
photograph in some way.
Right.
Yeah. So that becomes a collaboration.
Yes. And that's what I'm finding interesting in art today, as far
yeah.
as my field is the fun and interest that we get by collaborating.
Yeah.
I think of the experience I had with Dale Lamphere in the Arc of Dreams, that we got to collaborate.
Mm.
This incredible talent that does sculpture and the ability to say we want to create this piece that has a feeling of growth and acceptance in this community is something very special.
Yeah. Tell me where that idea came from for you. Because
the
vision of it begins with
right.
you.
Well,
right.
Well, what happened, this is the 21st year of Sculpture Walk in Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
Now think about that. We've had 21 years where we brought art and artists in from all over the world. And this year with it's the collection that will go up in May, we will have had over 1,200 pieces of art that graced our sidewalks here in Sioux Falls.
Wow.
And then we've also, through the vision, the city now buys the People's Choice Award. The people have selected this particular piece on the walk as the People's Choice. Now we have, the city now owns 20 pieces of art that
yeah.
the people have picked. And so this got to be about, I started with Jim when he first started with this thing back 21 years ago.
Jim Clark.
And the 10th anniversary was coming up. I said, Clark, we got to do something to really commemorate Sculpture Walk. And he said, well, what are you thinking? I said, well, you know, we need to put art across the river. And he said, well, I already have art at 8th and Railroad and a couple other places. I said, no, Jim. I want a piece of art across the river. He says, you're crazy. I said, yeah, I've been accused of that. And we just had gotten done working with Dale on the Song of Creation over at the Avera Prairie Center.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, let's call Lamphere and see what we might be able to do. We wanted to create a piece that truly gave and commemorated people that had done great things in this community
mm-hmm.
and inspire others to do the same. And then Dale came up with the whole concept of that space in the middle, that 15 feet.
Yeah.
And people say, what's that? I said, that's the leap of faith you have when you have an idea or a dream. There's risk.
Yeah.
And as a result, we've created, I think, quite a piece of work that has a lot of appeal.
Yeah.
And continues to have a lot of appeal. And I said the other thing I wanted was I wanted this to have great lighting. Mm-hmm. Because that creates art in itself every night. And so we have the kind of art lighting on there now that the Empire State Building uses. So we can do some remarkable things.
Yeah.
In fact, right now it's lit green to commemorate the passing of Craig Lloyd, and his company colors were green. And we can do those kinds of things to give recognition. Yeah. And as a result, it's all about the art.
Yeah.
And what it represents, and you find people down there. I've seen people get engaged down there,
yeah,
or celebrate a graduation or a wedding, and so it has a lot of different meanings, just like art does, when it comes to what people feel about it.
Yeah, one of the questions I feel like you maybe don't get asked, but people are thinking, who do you think you are? To do some of the audacious big things, do you have that internal question sometimes when you come up with the next big audacious idea? Do you ever think, well, who the heck do I think I am to do that? Because you're saying that with Arc of Dreams, that
right.
all of us are doing those big things.
Lauren, what's interesting, you talk about audacious dreams. We had 700 people write, and businesses write checks for the Arc of Dreams. That says it to me. Mm-hmm. A remarkable acceptance of this work.
Yeah.
Now, there was a point in time, because I made a big mistake when we first started the whole concept. I thought it was going to take us 2 years to do this and $1 million. I was wrong. It took us 6 years and $3 million. There was a point in time when I said, I don't think this is going to work, and maybe I got to write them all back checks. But fortunately, other people stepped up and kept liking what they saw, and as a result, we now have that here.
So you kept believing and kept believing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does that come from for you?
Well, my wife, Connie.
That 15 feet. Yeah.
Well, if it wasn't for her, I may not have been able to get this done, too. It took some key people. Craig Lloyd, obviously Dale Lamphere, my wife, Jim Clark, just a whole host of businesses and people that truly believed in the concept.
Yeah.
And believed in Dale Lamphere, too, because he had completed this piece in Sioux Falls and had just completed Dignity, which is a marvelous piece of work in Chamberlain.
Yeah.
That this has some possibilities. But we wanted something that really, truly showcased art and this community as being someone special.
Yeah. So you make art and you also support art. Why do people need to support art and artists in their communities?
Well, you look at what has been accomplished out west with Rushmore and Crazy Horse. Mm-hmm. I marvel. I've been on top of Crazy Horse and Rushmore both, and I've flown chopper missions photographically of that whole area, and it's astounding what's been accomplished. And as a result, I watch people at the monuments in awe that this is really happening. One of my most remarkable experiences I've had with art in Rushmore, and I welcome anybody in this area to do the same thing, is go to Rushmore at dawn and stand at that monument's viewing stand by yourself and watch the sunrise on that monument. And it will take your breath away when you're by yourself and thinking what great country we have here and all the challenges that we have, but to see that monument and what those four figures accomplished for us in America, it's right here in South Dakota.
You use the word awe, and I think of your macro photography as well. Obviously, Mount Rushmore is large in scale, but yet you're also looking at an orchid or a drop of water from the macro perspective.
Well,
when did you get interested in?
Yeah, what was interesting about that, having been a photojournalist taking pictures of people and events and what have you, and then getting back into the advertising game with Lawrence and Schiller, it took me away from being able to do a lot of photography.
Yeah.
And so one day my wife Connie is in the back yard doing a flower arrangement. She loved to plant flowers, and she's remarkable when it comes to arrangements. Mm-hmm. So I picked up the camera and I said, maybe I ought to photograph some of this stuff. And I took a few shots and it wasn't that good. But I put a macro lens on my camera and started getting up close.
Yeah.
And I went, holy smokes, who comes up with these ideas? You think about it, when you get up close to a gorgeous piece of flora, you see the incredible design, the texture, the color. Then you add that whole lighting element and composition. It's a marvelous experience. And that's how I started getting back into the game. Now, having been out and about and shooting all the close-ups, I started seeing some of the nice things around me for landscape. Yeah. And I said, maybe I ought to play in this realm, too. So my whole direction in my work today is macro photography and panoramic landscapes. I give everybody else the middle. They can have the middle, but I get these two extremes. And as a result, we have some remarkable things in this that are just around us.
Yeah. How has that changed the way you see South Dakota?
I see it as just a total learning and exploratory kind of experience. Yeah. I tell people, walk down, go to McKenna Park here and walk into the gardens and then turn around and walk back. Light's different. You'll see different things. And it didn't cost you anything as a result.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get back and say, okay, what's art doing for this community? Well, think about this. 25 years ago, the Washington Pavilion had just opened. It was just an empty school.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have Sculpture Walk. We didn't have the Arc of Dreams. We didn't have the Levitt. The State Theater and Orpheum Theaters were shuttered. Now, think about what this community would be like today if they didn't have those key elements. Oh, they had David in a parking garage or a maintenance
storage
area.
David was in storage, yeah.
But you think about what that's now accomplished. We've had over 1,200 pieces of art on Sculpture Walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I marvel, one of the most fun experiences you have in this city is the May Saturday that we install the new art.
Yeah.
And to watch the kids come down and make friends with their new art partners. And I tell people, you know, we really do have a remarkable community here. A family can come down here on a Saturday afternoon for a couple hours and play with the sculptures on Sculpture Walk. They can walk up Phillips Avenue here and grab a pizza and then walk across the street and have a 2-hour free concert. And now you're going to end the evening by walking through the Steel District up to the Arc of Dreams. And the whole day cost you a pizza. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that's all about art.
What do we need from the next generation of artists in our community?
Artists, I think it's improving vastly. We're seeing a few more galleries in town. I think what you're going to see now, the Alcove down on the Steel District, we'll start seeing some shows available. It's kind of like Asheville, North Carolina. I've been there a couple of times on a Saturday, and you've got to make reservations if you want to stay there for the weekend. You'll walk downtown, and we took an hour to get into a cafe for lunch.
Yeah.
The bars were full. The retail establishments were full, and the green space was pop-up art, and on every street corner was a musician.
Hmm.
We're going to have that here now.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's just going to add another dimension and introduce people to the world of art. And that's what I've had fun over the last few years, of introducing executives to art and what it can do for their businesses. And then I say, all I want from you is 10% of what you spend on athletics. I'm not greedy, just 10%. And I got Craig Lloyd and Jeff Schirschlick and Miles Beacom and a few of these executives engaged in the arts, and they like it.
Yeah.
And as a result, they pony up and want to do more.
Some people are afraid of the arts because they don't like what it reflects sometimes. They might not like a certain piece.
Right.
Or they might not like what a certain artist has to say.
Right.
What's the role of an artist in getting people to, in really producing the work that they want to work, and not corporate sort of doing the same thing to make a sale all the time? What's the role of artists in making us think?
Artists need to become better communicators.
Okay.
Case in point. Think about this. an artist creates a fairly abstract piece of art and puts it up on the wall or what have you with no information about it. And you walk up to it and you go, well, that's kind of weird. Now, if there's an artist statement next to it that explains why I did that particular piece or the background on it, you look at and read that and you go, oh, that's kind of cool. So we went from weird to cool just by explaining as to why I did what I did. I find it interesting story. With my work. A lot of people want to know, where did you photograph that? Mm-hmm. I've done a whole series now on four seasons in Sioux Falls, and I'm working with a book that'll benefit the Arboretum called If Trees Could Talk. And I'll show people some of these four season images, and they go, where is this? I said, it's right here. Really? So it's about recognition and just, you know, kind of throttling back and taking a look and enjoy what truly is around us.
Yeah. Do we have an opportunity as artists here to change art in the country?
Sure.
I mean, obviously, we're talking about Dalian Fear, so everybody knows that I already think that's true. But in what other ways can our artists, redefine...
Well,
I think what's
happening here with the Levitt, you see what, on the music side of things, I mean, we've got 50 free concerts from artists from all over the country. You see Brulé play here, and I've helped support an event over at Okoboji with Brulé, and we had 8,000 people show up. It's exposure and experience, and then let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Let's experience this. And what are you getting out of this? Because we all know art is very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
One day you might like the piece. The next day, whatever's going through your life, you're going, well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Why did I do that?
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our conversation with Paul Schiller. He's being honored with the Outstanding Support of the Arts by an Individual Award at the Governor's Awards in the Arts Ceremony this Wednesday in Fort Pierre. It is an opportunity for a governor to also be thinking about the role of arts in the state of South Dakota. What would your message be, or what would you ask Governor Larry Roden about his commitment to the arts going forward?
I would like to gain an understanding of what he thinks the arts should be. I think before I push as to what I think it is, I'd sure like to know what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And what his experiences have been, and how we might be able to work in collaboration to take it to the next level in this state.
Yeah.
And I think if we had that kind of discussion, I think he'd stop and think for a little bit to say, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Because I think we then have to show him the importance art plays in our society. Art enriches a community and a society. We have to understand that. Just like I talked earlier about the walk with the family on a weekend.
Yeah.
The experience. And that's what I've witnessed with executives. Once I show them what it can do and mean, they get it. They're smart. They just haven't been exposed or educated on that line of work.
Yeah. What do you want to do as an artist yourself that you haven't been able to do yet?
I need to do a book.
Okay.
And I also would love to do a feature in this community on projection mapping. I've seen a couple of shows of Van Gogh's and what have you in the last couple of years where they use projection.
Sort of immersive experience for the gallery goer then, yeah.
It is stunning. And I could do it with my work as far as having the right place. And there's a place in town that I'm going to pitch as to what we might be able to do, but it blows me away as to the magnitude of the experience.
Yeah. When it's just you or you and Connie at home, at night, by yourself, how has art made your life better?
Well, what we try to do is we want to support the arts and have these arts organizations gain new opportunities. And that requires going out asking for money.
Yeah.
Got to have the idea. And we talk idea. Connie was instrumental in creating the Taste of Sioux Falls, which benefits, obviously, Sculpture Walk. I got involved in being on the foundation board of directors here in Sioux Falls and actually chaired it for a couple of years, and we started City Blossom. And we added art to that whole thing. And today it becomes a great gathering point for snowbirds coming back to Sioux Falls. And those are the right kinds of people you want coming back to those events, because then we've got ideas that maybe they want to support.
Yeah.
So it's all about just sitting down and say, what's next? What could we do? We also travel, and so we see things. And I had a great experience here a couple of weeks ago with Craig Lloyd down at the Botanical Gardens in Naples, Florida, of some things that we could bring back. I tell people, I don't steal ideas, I adapt them. And that's, you know, that's what I do. But it keeps me alive and keeps me focused on what could we do and what are other people doing that we could bring back to our great state to help enrich it.
I wasn't sure you answered my question there until you said, it keeps me alive.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. A reason to get out of the bed every morning and go do the next thing with the arts. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for spending time with us.
Well, art is such a, you know, it's kind of interesting. People say, well, what kind of spurred you on in art? I said, an art history course I had at the University of South Dakota, taught by Oscar Howell.
Wow.
And I remember being in the Army overseas in the early 70s, and we took a few days off and went to Amsterdam, and we got into the Rijksmuseum where the night watch was. And I could recall when I walked in that room, I didn't realize it was so big with two security people on either side, because I can remember the page in my art history book that Oscar Howell had taught us about Rembrandt, and I was there. You know, you can't help but being, you know, impressed with those kinds of things when you have that kind of experience.
Yeah.
And be able to be taught by Oscar Howe. And he was being a remarkable artist, but also a great teacher.
Yeah. And did you know at that time just what his legacy was going to be?
No.
Yeah.
But I got to photograph him and interview him as a photojournalist.
Really?
Yeah.
What did
in his studio.
Yeah. And you asked him what?
Well, I thought his style was so unique.
Yeah.
That as to what brought you to this part of your art.
Yeah. As a Vallant student, is that what it was for? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're in the Army, which is not known as being the most artistic of places, and Oscar Howe is there with you.
Yeah.
And so is Rembrandt.
Those have some resonating impacts. Yeah. On one's life when you have that experience, when you think about it.
Yeah.
And then the advertising game, what brought that, I got to work with some of the finest writers and designers and production people that I could ever thought of. And we got to collaborate every day on creating unique things to help a client succeed.
Yeah.
Art did that.
Paul Schiller, one of the recipients of the Governor's Awards in the Arts. We'll have more of those conversations throughout the week as we get ready for the award ceremony Wednesday in Fort Pierre. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you from all of us at SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.